It's still a male-dominant job field, despite efforts to get more women working on highway construction projects. But two states were recently singled out for success in putting women to work on the roads, Oregon and Maryland. The recognition came in a report called Untapped Resources, Untapped Labor Pool, put out by the organizations Jobs for the Future and the Institute for Women's Policy Research. From Jobs for the Future, we welcome Gary Scott, who is the director of the Greenways Initiative there. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
It's good to have you here. And pardon me if I butcher your name. Ariane Hegwisch is with the Institute for Women's Policy Research and is one of the co-authors of Untapped Resources, Untapped Labor Pool. Ariane, how do you really pronounce your name?
That was perfect. Thank you very much for looking at this issue.
Oh, glad to have you both here. Tell us, if you would, a bit about each of your organizations. Ariane, let's start with you.
Well, we are, I guess, a think tank in Washington, D.C., and we do research on women's economic security. So we look at the type of jobs that allow women to support themselves and their families, and we look at discrimination and work-family supports and pensions, anything really that helps women make a living.
And Gary, tell us a bit about Jobs for the Future.
Okay, Jobs for the Future is a national nonprofit organization that manages large-scale initiatives aimed at improving the economic security of low-income and underskilled workers everywhere. We operate large initiatives aimed at improving the outcomes for unemployed or underemployed adults, as well as improving the outcomes for underskilled or underemployed or youth from low-income communities, and getting them into either apprenticeships or post-secondary education. So we operate in multiple states all over the country, but our headquarters is in Boston, Massachusetts, so we're on the other coast.
All right. Ariane, what's the genesis for this particular report? It seems like it'd be easy to figure out just from a cursory glance that highway construction is still a very white, very male field.
Yes, it's interesting. I mean, firstly, if you look at how many women work in construction, there are actually quite a few. There are more women construction workers than there are dental hygienists or vets or pharmacists, you know. So there are quite a few women, but they only make up 3% of the construction workforce, the people who do the actual building and the electricians and people who build roads. And there have been efforts to open the industry up to women, firstly because they're good jobs, they pay well, and you do not need to invest a lot in college education to get a well-paying job, but also because, you know, only 3% women in an industry means that the industry is likely missing a lot of potentially motivated and good workers. So it's both from the point of view of women's welfare, if you like, and from the point of view of the economy and employers' welfare. This has been an object of policy attention for a while, but much more happened in the 80s and 90s than happened in the late 90s and 2000s. And so we kind of know what stops women from moving into the industry, because firstly, nobody tells young women or girls in school about those jobs. And then, you know, girls are much less likely to work with their dad on tools than boys are, and often they're still told it's not appropriate, so they have to face they're facing higher barriers to get in. And then there can be quite a lot of discrimination and, if not nastiness, on the job. So really the need to invest in roads and highways provides an opportunity to properly approach training and pathways into those jobs, and there actually is potentially some funding available through federal highway dollars to support those type of trainings.
Now, I understand that some of that highway money has been available for 20 years plus, perhaps. Gary Scott, can you address that?
Yes, hi, Jeffrey. The funding has been available through the U.S. Department of Transportation in its appropriations to states. They had historically allowed for one half of 1% of funding from the U.S. Department of Transportation to states for surface transportation, highways and bridge reconstruction. It was at the option of states to decide to use the funding for training or to put the money actually straight into the production of bridges and highways. And so, as we pointed out in the report, over the last decade or so, really only a very small number of states, about seven states, ever did tap that 0.5% for occupational training, because it's not part of the mindset really of the transportation industry to focus on workforce training. They're more interested in building the highways. But Jobs for the Future had received a large $8 million three-year grant from the U.S. Department of Labor through something called the Green Jobs Innovation Fund. And part of what they wanted us to do was to train, again, low-income, lower-skilled adults in high-demand occupations. And two of the models that they were encouraging us to pursue were pre-apprenticeship models. And we did a pre-apprenticeship program in Washington, D.C., and in Seattle, Washington. And through those pre-apprenticeship programs, we were really zeroing in on, could we increase the number of women who were entering registered apprenticeship? And we found that we were quite successful, frankly, at when we focused in on providing the kinds of services, as Ariana pointed out, we've known for a long time what it is that works to increase the success of women in the construction trades, but it's a different way of doing business. And so we did provide funding to a couple of organizations to specifically focus in on trying to recruit and train and prepare women for careers in the construction industry through the Green Jobs Innovation Fund.
All right, we're talking to Gary Scott at Jobs for the Future, the director of the Greenways Initiative, and Ariana Hegovich, the Institute for Women's Policy Research, about getting women and minorities, particularly women, onto highway construction crews. Oregon showing some success. Join us at 800-838-3760 around the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Ariana, what in specific is Oregon doing that seems to be having some success in getting women onto road crews?
Yeah, the reason we focused on Oregon really is because it's a very systematic model. So what they did, and it started in 2009, and this Department of Transportation funding, the governor could have just asked the federal DOT to pass on the money, but they decided to pass a law to focus on that to provide stability and clear accountability measures over time. And so what the Department of Labor together with the Department of Transport in Oregon are doing is they started this in 2010, 2011, when you remember the construction industry was not doing so well. It wasn't as bad in Oregon as in a lot of other parts of the country, but still there was high unemployment. And so a big problem was that people might have gotten into apprenticeships but couldn't stay in there. They couldn't finish their training. So they spent some money on retention, on supports for existing apprentices, and they supported women, white women and women of minority backgrounds and men of minority backgrounds with such things such as cost for childcare. That often was something that threw people out of the program. Cost for travel, often in transport in the highway jobs, you might have to go to a job and stay somewhere overnight, and then you have to, sleep somewhere overnight, so it costs. And also supports for tools. So supports to help people stay in their apprenticeships. Then they funded also a pre-apprenticeship program, and Oregon is very lucky to, for the last, I think over 10 years now, it has Oregon Tradeswomen, Inc., who are based in Portland and who run specific pre-apprenticeship programs for women to get into construction trades. And so they funded Oregon tradeswomen as well as two other community training programs to run pre-apprenticeship programs for trades which are relevant to the construction industry. And they're still doing that. And they also then said, okay, we've got the pre-apprenticeship training, we're supporting apprenticeship, now we need to get the word out. Because the other problem is that young women just don't consider those careers. So they funded Oregon tradeswomen to run high school fairs and to run kind of, you know, career fairs about this. And then finally, they funded, I think, the University of Portland to do some research in and evaluation of what they're doing. And out of that came, through interviews with apprenticeships, large-scale interviews, came initiatives to tackle discrimination on the job, because people were saying we're getting fewer of the jobs and, you know, we're not treating as equal. So they also ran, developed modules for supervisors on those programs to recognize and to tackle discrimination. So it's a very, you know, it really goes from A to Z. It's a very systematic program.
Now, as you pointed out, we're talking about the methods of attracting people to the to the business in the first place, but retention comes up often in this report, untapped resources, untapped labor pool. So, Gary, is it harder to keep women than to get them in the first place?
Well, every part of the pipeline, if you will, presents some challenges. As Ariana has so accurately pointed out, young girls don't necessarily see themselves working in the construction trades. And so we have found that if one wants to increase the number of women in the trades, not only do you have to have recruitment materials that are specifically targeted towards women, that are, you know, women who are talking to other women about being in the trades, recruitment materials that feature pictures of women working in the trades, and going to places where you find women and saying, you know, occupations in construction pay significantly better than traditional women's work. And when you start framing it for women, particularly younger women who are still trying to figure out what they want to do with their lives, all of a sudden construction begins to appear like a more desirable occupational track. But then you get them into a traditional training program, which, frankly, has mostly men in it, and there's a bit of a culture challenge, you know. Men and women, you know, particularly men in the trades, their way of interacting with each other is sometimes a little bit more robust, I guess I might say, than women typically experience. And so you have to train the instructors in the training program how to help women be aware of coping with the different attitudes and different ways of interacting with people when they're working in the trades. So you have to train the instructors. And oftentimes in the apprenticeship programs themselves, you also have to do a different kind of training for women who might need more physical conditioning exercises, which is one of the things that the OTI program does, the Oregon Tradeswomen program does. It includes physical conditioning in the training, has workshops on how to deal with sexual harassment on the job. And then you do get to the place where once you're in a registered apprenticeship, you go into the hiring hall, and you have to deal with the attitudes of the contractors who kind of will look at the name of a woman on the list, and she'll kind of go to the bottom of the list of folks that they want to hire because they just don't believe that a woman is strong enough or skilled enough to do the job. So that's where the retention piece comes in. It's both contractors' beliefs, which aren't always held up with experience, frankly, about whether women can do the job, so they don't tend to hire them. And then it's also the, frankly, there are issues of harassment and discrimination frequently on the job, which one addresses. And this is another nice thing about the Oregon strategy, is that they now are putting resources into doing some awareness training for frontline supervisors of contractors in the construction industry.
Ariana, the information is highlighted again in this report that you co-authored, Untapped Resources, Untapped Labor Pool, described as a briefing paper. A briefing for whom? Who's supposed to look at this, and are other states expressing interest in what Oregon is doing?
Well, that's exactly who we're hoping will look at this. It's really aimed at other states, and it might be community training programs hoping to expand this type of training, or women already working in the trades, or people trying to build up systematic programs. So our target audience are people who work with state legislators and to possibly try and mimic what Oregon has done, both in terms of passing legislation so that they have a secure funding source, but also to look at the way, the systematic way in which Oregon has built up the program. I guess the other audience for us is the ideal one is the Department of Transportation itself, because they do a lot of good things around this, and they're very aware that workforce development is really required now for the highway construction industry, because demographic change means that a lot of skilled workers are in reach of retirement, and you cannot recreate a skilled worker overnight in this industry. It
right.
does take a couple of years, and so we really would like. We think there are other states who might have done things, but there isn't a very good central data source. And we really think that the Department of Transportation federally should do more to encourage states to make use of this fund for those purposes and to help them exchange good practice.
All right. This information is certainly available now through this report, Untapped Resources, Untapped Labor Pool. Ariane Hegewisch with the Institute for Women's Policy Research helped write it. We've also been joined by Gary Scott from Jobs for the Future. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so
much.
You bet.